This is Carolyn Cromings, and welcome to the Quit Getting Screwed podcast, where we talk about everything related to contractors, construction, and information to help you run better businesses. Hey guys, and welcome back to the Quit Getting Screwed podcast, where we talk about all the ways not to get screwed in the construction industry. And I'm so excited for today's guest. If you are at all involved in home improvement, this show is for you, especially if you're in home improvement and you're burning the candle at both ends, but don't seem to make any progress or any money. Today I have with me Tom Reber, the founder of The Contractor Fight, a newly published book, Winning the Contractor Fight, which I have read and has great practical information for all businesses, even for me, but especially if you're in the home improvement world, this book is for you. It's got tactical, this is how to advice, some really great stuff in here. So welcome to the show, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for being here. So my first question to you is, why is it so important for you to reach out and help contractors?
Well, I grew up in a family of contractors, and I watched the struggle. I was one and lived the struggle. And I just see so many good men and women that are working their tails off. They'll lay in traffic for their customers, right? They'll do anything for them. They'll, they take so much pride in what they do. And it's just not fair that the average home improvement contractor we've seen over the past several years is only making 50 to 60 grand a year. They're up to their eyeballs in debt, and their relationships aren't what they need to be because of the stress of the business and all these things. And so that's just really where my heart is. You know, I just want it. These are great people doing great things. We need them. We need them to win. You know, the labor shortage and what's been going on even before all the stuff the last couple of years, you know, it was still hard for people to get into the trades. And I think one of the reasons is we have not, as contractors, done a good job of being attractive as an industry for people. So for people, you know, making money and having a good life that you want to emulate.
I think the construction industry is a rough and tumble business. No matter which part you're in, either residential or commercial, there's a lot. And I think, like I said, I think your book, oh, by the way, before we jump in, I know we'll put this show note, where can people get your book, Winning the Contractor Fight?
Yeah, you can go to thecontractorfight.com/book. And if you want to get crazy, you can go to Amazon and find it there too. But if you go to /book, you'll get it for free.
Awesome.
There you go.
Great.
Just pay shipping and handling. Let me clarify that.
Yes,
I want to be clear.
Absolutely.
See, I'm on with an attorney right now, so I should probably pay attention to those details, right? Yeah.
Just a little details, but I mean.
That's right.
So, you know, a lot of in your book is you talk about mindset, which I think is huge. But how did you figure out that was a huge part of the contractor fight?
I at some point several years ago, I just started working on me. I hired some of my own coaches. I started reading and listening to things that opened my eyes to really why I wasn't making the progress in certain areas that I wanted to make. And I was doing a lot of the right things. I just didn't have my thought and my belief system strong. And, I think to me, that's been the biggest game changer is, you know, our thoughts, we call it T-bar, you know that in the fight. Your thoughts, what you think, subconscious or conscious, are going to direct what you believe, and then your beliefs will lead to your actions, and those actions will give you the results that you want. And I just saw, the result I wanted for many years is I wanted to make more money, but I had all these head trash and, you know, negative self-talk and stuff around money. Rebers never make money, this and that. And that's just what was fed into me for many, many years. And so even though I was working really hard, I didn't have the complete package, you know, that was getting me those results. And then I literally just started writing down every day and reciting it several times a day. I'm a magnet for money and success. I'm a magnet for money and success. And, you know, I'm worth, you know, more zeros. Like I always say, be a multiple zero person behind the number, that first number, whatever that is. Too many contractors are a $10 or a $100 or whatever. Let's be that $10,000 type mindset, $100,000 mindset. And when I just started intentionally changing my thoughts, I truly believed I was worth it. And I made a bunch more money, like just by doing the same actions I was already doing. So I don't know how it works, but it works.
So how long did it take before you saw results when you started changing your mindset? Was it immediate? Did it take a while?
It was immediate because I was relentless on the consistency of what I was going to drill into my head. One of my coaches many, many years ago was like, dude, you need to attack this stuff. And he opened my eyes to this. I'm like, well, why? For so many years, like, what do they say? There's 70 to 90,000 thoughts we have a day as a human. Mm-hmm. Most of those are on autopilot subconsciously, or they're negative, or they're the same thoughts we had the day before. And so I just looked, I'm 52, and I had all these decades behind me where I just let whatever show up my head subconsciously, consciously, whatever. And so I became relentless about trying to offset all those years of that negative mindset. And so for me, the change happened pretty quick. I mean, there was a moment where I decided to go toe to toe with some of my mental baggage and some things like that. And from that day, within just a couple years, you know, we're talking, you know, multi-million dollar businesses. We're talking like it was quick, very quick. So
one of my favorite lines in your book is this line that says, the I'm stupid story that I believed about myself was the cowardly terrorist mm-hmm. that was sabotaging my own freedom and success. Wow, that's amazing to think about, that your own thoughts could be your own terrorist. So you're working on this. Does it get easier? Is it always this hard? Every day do you have to fight? What does that look like?
Yeah, well, I think if you're paying attention, if you're somebody who's consistent and working on yourself and growing, you're always going to have a battle to fight because you're always going to grow to another level. And what I found with that quote and this and that was I had spent all these years thinking I was stupid. I was in special ed for 2 years. I rode the short bus. And I always just had that ball and chain dragging around with me no matter what I did. And I was really successful as a Marine. I was already successful in business. I was like, when people would look at me, they go, wow, this guy's pretty successful. But I knew what was really going on. I was afraid to put myself into situations where I would be mentally challenged or I would have to defend my case. So believe it or not, a lot of times I would have been a terrible attorney in those years because I had such insecurity about trusting my thoughts and my beliefs and what I wanted to happen that I never shared those things. And it's really crazy when I look back. And sometimes I slip into those old moments. I think we have, you know, it's like a stupid rash or something now and then that just keeps flaring up. So yeah, from time to time, I have those moments with that mindset that I was stupid. What's been hitting me recently, and you know me, I'm an open book. I have nothing to hide from people. I'm right now, I'm having to remind myself, and I have a coach that I work with again now, a different one, and he's always in my ear saying, don't be seduced by success. So I think that's the level I'm at now is things are pretty good, you know, and there's some, and we were at the event in Denver and all that. And I came off the heels of that event. And I don't think I've told anyone this actually. So you're the first. I was out for a walk and I was like, you know, the stories I told from the stage and the examples I gave, they were from a while back.
Really?
And I said, it's about time I have some new stories. So that to me was like, I have not been stepping on the gas as much as I need to in certain areas. It's funny because everybody that sees what we're doing in the fight, we've exploded over this past couple years, wrote a book, put on a huge event. We got 4 events a year. We're doing like, again, as a company, we're crushing it. But I know me and I know I'm beginning to just go, you know, I need to up my game personally. So that I have some new war stories to tell instead of the ones from a few years ago, if that makes sense. I don't know. Did you ever see the show Vikings?
Yes.
Okay. So I think it was the first episode and Ragnar, the king who becomes the king, his mm-hmm. brother, what was his name? Rollo or something?
Yeah.
Big guy Rollo. All right. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm just making up names.
No.
Anyway, they're going around and Ragnar wanted to go. He wanted to go west into the ocean and the king wanted them to go east inland to raid. Mm-hmm. And whatever. And he wanted to go the other way out in the ocean and see what was out there and go kill stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And plunder. And he asked all the guys on his boat, he's like, are you in? Are you going to go with me? Are you guys? And they're like, yes, 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 yes. He gets to his brother at the very end and he says, what's up? You haven't answered yet. He says, are you with me? And he says, of course I am. I need stories to tell my kids. And that line resonated with me so much, just that it turns the heat up on me to push, to step on the gas, to not be complacent. And so, yeah, quite honestly, the last 3 weeks or whatever, 4 weeks it's been since we had the event, I think I had a little post-event drag, you know, because it was several months. Mm-hmm. And last week I'm like, you need to get off your butt, man. You got more to do. So that's my biggest battle right now, is not being seduced by success.
Well, I mean, you got a lot of people to help, right? And there's a lot of people out there that need your help. And that was a great event, by the way. And that's, and you know, we can look at all the stuff that you put out is just amazing. And, but you know, it still starts with winning that battle. I mean, for years, I told myself the same thing. Mm-hmm. I'd failed third grade. I'd never be anything, even though I'd already become a lawyer. It's just, I still didn't think it was that great. And so You get stuck in your own head unless you have a goal that you're working on. It's so easy to just knock yourself back down. So that brings us, so let's get to some of the technicals. What is oxygen for a business, and how do we get more of it?
Yeah, well, on the surface, it's money. That's what we refer to. Like, you got to have money. You got to have oxygen, right? We've taken it deeper, you know, that where it's your mindset, it's your health, your relationships. Like, you have to take care of you first. Tactically and technically, it's leads and sales. That's oxygen for a business. But I think in the fight, we're really careful to say, yeah, it's that and making sure that you're getting yours, because your company's only going to be as strong as you are as an individual, and you know, the team that you have around you. And you know, we did the we talk about in the book too, the profit path goes along with this. Like, it starts with leadership, then it goes to culture, then it goes to employee satisfaction. I should have drew it as a circle. It hit me long after, because it's really an inside out approach to having a successful business. So we'll probably have something redesigned for that down the road. But where most of us as business owners, we go out and we try to take care of our customers first. We try to do better quality work or whatever it might be. That's where most contractors default, instead of saying, hey, it's okay that you take care of you, you pay yourself first, and those things. And that was a big shift I made over the years, that when I got selfish about getting oxygen for me and my own, everything else got better for everybody else.
I know that there's a lot of guys that want to do that, but they're scared. So where do they start? What's one thing that they could focus on that would get them closer to that?
Well, I'd start by looking at the math. You know, if somebody's ever fighting me on raising their prices or their financial situation, I just have them job cost the last five jobs. And 100% of the time they come back and they go, my God, I'm not making any money, right? So, but I think look at your bank account, right? You know, let's start with that. Look at your stress level. At some point, you can't hard work yourself to success all the time. That's not the only piece of the equation, because if that were it, contractors would be the wealthiest people on the planet. All right. Nobody works harder than us. But a lot of times our strategy's messed up. We're paying attention to the going rate of what other contractors are charging, when it's laughable that 90% of them don't make any money, have a ton of debt, and they're stressed, and yet we're looking at them for pricing advice and things like that, you know? So you got to change your circle. I think that's another thing. Start hanging out with people that think differently than the typical stressed out man or woman who's running a contracting business, who doesn't make the money they want to make. And when I say this, I don't want people to think I'm picking on those contractors. I was one for many years. Great men and women. We're doing the best you can at the time with the knowledge you have. I totally get that. But at some point, you got to go, what I'm doing is not working. And so those first steps for me is, you know, I look at the math and then I decide who I'm hanging out with. And I'm really picky about that. And that was another big thing for me when I was doing all that affirmation stuff that I was talking about earlier, and I was relentless. I was also changing the circle of people I was hanging with, spending time with. Even if I didn't know them, it'd be somebody's book, it'd be a podcast, just to be exposed to a different way of thinking.
Well, I think especially once you jump onto that self-development, some people think you're crazy and other people are right there along with you. And so whether that's in a podcast, a book or whatever, if you can, you know, I think we can only elevate each other. Now, you said something about job costing.
Yeah.
Do you have something like that that explains that at your website?
Oh, we got stuff all over. I think if you go to thecontractorfight.com/job cost and job costing. I think we have both of those that work in case you type one in, but it's just a sheet. It's a,
it's a sheet that just,
you know, contractor goes and they figure out, hey, we're going to paint Mrs. Jones's house or whatever. Well, how do you know if your price is the right price? You know, you need to know what things are truly costing you. We have a thing in the fight, and it's funny. People say, in certain comments online, I've been noticing people are like, Tom Reber's 50% method. I'm like, Tom Reber didn't invent 50% gross profit. I just preach it more than anybody, right? Like, it just made sense that if you're going to charge a dollar for something, or something costs you a dollar, charge two. If it costs you 100 grand, charge 200 grand. All right. And then if you could produce it at that, you have a 50% gross profit, which then goes to pay overhead and you're not going into debt. You can market your business, invest in your people, pay yourself a salary. That all starts with job costing and knowing what things cost you to produce. I had no idea for several years. I mean, I was running 20 something painters at one time. We're doing all this crazy revenue and and I literally had no money. And when I started job costing, we cut the team in half and I doubled what I was making. Like, it was more than cut the team in half, actually, because we started paying attention to the math and we started learning how to sell and how to market and position your business in a better way so that the right people want to do business with. It was a combination of all these things, but it started with just, you know, you want to get from here to there on a map, you got to know where here is. And that's really what the job costing is. And then it morphs into, you start pre-job costing a project. Like, you're going to go, hey, we're going to do this project. Let's plug it into the sheet before I sell it. And then go, is this going to be worth it? You know, with the pain in the butt factor and all that stuff. And maybe the time of year and other risks involved. And most times people end up charging more for that project when they run it through that job costing sheet.
So, first question. I mean, like, what percentage of contractors come to you and have no idea what it costs to do a project?
When they first come to us, it's 85 or 90 easily. Like, they'll have a rough idea, like, or they'll get really confused. They'll work their overhead into the actual job costs sometimes. And that's, there's a few different ways to figure out your numbers, but a lot of times people are confused what's overhead, what's not, and things like that. But easily 85 to 90% don't know their numbers really at all. Don't track their metrics. Don't job cost after a project, don't track their sales closing rate, don't track their lead sources and profit per source and all these things.
And so if they spent time doing that, they'd actually spend less time working so hard, right? Is that what you found?
Yeah, because, you know, if I had 6 hours to chop a tree down, right? I'd use the first four or whatever the quote is to sharpen the axe. This is sharpening the axe.
Gotcha.
So, well, let me go back to what we tell ourselves. So people will come to us and they'll go, I see that my numbers aren't where they need to be, but there's no way I can double my price. There's no way I could do this. And that's going back to what I was telling earlier about what we tell ourselves. You have to start saying things like, there was a point where I was literally like, at the time, I'm trying to think, I lived outside of Chicago. There's 150,000 people in the actual town that we were in. And, you know, a couple million in the surrounding suburbs, right? Like, it's crazy. You know that. And I got to a point where I was like, there's at least, and I had worked out like how many people we needed a year to become our customer at our average job size and all this other stuff. And then I started telling myself, there's at least 550 people in this area that would pay our prices. There's at least, or now with hiring, I'm coaching people, like, everyone's like, nobody wants to work. I'm like, let's flip the story. Out of the 3 million people in my city, there's at least 4 people that would love to be part of my team. Like, that's what you have to start telling yourself, so then you'll believe it, then you'll act upon it. So that's, a lot of people could see this, but they struggle with taking the action on it and actually implementing the things they're learning because their head's so jacked up.
So how do you convince people to take that step to just do that 50% markup? Because I can just hear people, there's no way my customers would buy that, or there's no way I could do that. I mean, how do you convince people that just to go out and try?
It's actually 100% markup. You're
really
doubling what it costs you. Yeah, yes. To get a 50% markup would be a 33% gross profit. So that's another place a lot of people get confused. They go, all right, the job's costing me $1,000. I'm going to mark it up 50%. They charge $1,500.
It should be 2,000
versus 2,000. So I know what you meant, and I know you know what you meant, but a lot of times that terminology, it confuses people. So What was your question again?
Or
Because I
how do you
dropped
get
out.
them to make that
Yeah.
jump? You tell them to try one project, or how do you get them to? Because I know you're coaching these guys, and I know they got to be.
Yeah.
I know there's got to be tons of pushback.
I think we do a good job of going to them where they're at, and we dig into the pain. Like, let's look how hard you're working. Let's look, what's the success leaves clues, and so does not success. What's the opposite of failure, right? I don't want to say failure, but you know what I mean. Like, if you don't change something, this is what you're going to get for the rest of your career. And this is, again, coming back to the community. That's why we have so many free groups, do so much free content in the fight, is to expose these people to other people that are already doing it. They're a half a lap ahead, they're 2 laps ahead, whatever it is. And that gives you hope. So I think it's hang out with the right people, back to the job costing, back to let's look at your bank account. I think it's a combination of these things. I think a lot of times it's funny. I've had couples come out to Colorado to do, coaching days with us and things like that. And the funniest times are when, and it's not just when they're here, sometimes on Zoom or whatever, but it's the funniest is when I go, so how are things at home and how's the business affecting home life? And the husband's like, oh, it's fine, it's great, blah, blah, blah. Like, and the wife will just look, the spouse will look over, and she's like, are you freaking crazy me? You're never home. You blah, blah, blah. You're doing this. We don't have any money. Every year you're putting your resume together to go get a job for somebody else because you're wondering about closing the business down. You're up till 11 or 12 or 1 every morning typing up bids that you never get. Like, and I just sit back and I'm like, all right, I guess we're ready to change then, huh? So I think it's a combination of these things. And I don't think there's a formula, but I just think you have to show people there's a different way.
And that it works. I mean,
And then it works.
you have a huge following out there that can testify that this is what works and that you're coaching. I mean, people just say, I mean, I've talked to some of the people, they're just so impressed and they've come so far, and they talk about what it used to look like before they did this, and that how they're working so hard but still not making any money, and that this really made the difference of working on the business side of your business, which whatever you do, if you're the best at, you still have to be good at business, right?
Have to
Still.
be. And listen, I can't convince somebody to do it. I can only point to evidence. Like, I can't make somebody eat right and go to the gym. I can't make you spend your money a certain way and save it and all. Like, you have to want to do those things. So again, that's where I think it's so important to hang around with the right people. I think it's important for us as coaches to just point to the evidence and just go, there it is. Take it or leave it. Like, it's, we're very low pressure in the fight when people call us about coaching. We're like, hey, you want help? You want to move faster? Jump in a program. If not, that's cool. We'll see you in a year or two when you're tired of it again. So
Exactly.
it's
We're here when you're ready. And and honestly, even if you don't have the money to spend, the book is a great resource with great tactical things to get
Thank
on
you.
to do. And so when somebody comes to you and you're coming to your coaching and they're like, I want to make $10 million, is that really what you focus on, or is that really what they're looking for? What does that look like if somebody comes to you and says that?
Well, I think it depends where they're at when they come to me. If they're at 9 million, they want to get to 10. Let's have a conversation, right? But usually it's somebody comes, says, I want to build a $10 million business, and they're doing 300 grand a year. And I'm like, so, which is fine. You can have that goal. But let's again figure out where we're at. But then I get into the why. Why do you want it? Most times, again, this is, and I used to believe this. I used to believe that you could only pay yourself about 10% of the top line revenue as a business. Like, that was like word on the street in the painting contractor community many years ago. Or you'd hear things like, you want to shoot for a 10% net profit. Like, that's the going rate net profit. So I think what happens is contractors a lot of time go, I want to build a $5 or $10 million business or whatever that top line number is, because they have some negative information about what that's going to give them. Like, just because you have a $5, $10 million business with a lot of trucks and all these people doesn't mean you're going to be making any money. Now, you might be making more than you're making now, but at what cost? And so one of the things I think our team does really well is somebody says, yeah, I want to build the $10 million business in your example. We dig in, what's behind that? Why does it have to be 10? I've coached people who are like, well, I want to do 5 million a year so I can pay myself 250 a year. And I'm like, so what you're telling me is you can't pay yourself 250 a year unless you do 5 million? You know, like it just opens some things up. Well, or I want to scale my business. Well, what do you want to scale? Do you want to scale revenue? Do you want to scale profit? Do you want to scale time off? I literally had a guy a few years ago. He wanted to, his whole goal was to sell his business, and we ended up selling it for a few million bucks. And he, 2 years out, he said, I want to start scaling my time off. And so all of our focus was what was in him not working. So when that new buyer came, or that buyer came along, he could be like, I spend like 4 hours a month on this company, 1 hour a week in a meeting with my team, and they do the rest. And it's on autopilot. Here's the keys. You don't need me. We're good. Okay. So there was, but freedom's usually at the heart of it. You know, they want freedom. I wanted freedom. You want freedom.
That's
We
not.
all want freedom. And sometimes, you know, I've seen it. Somebody I know, until they sold their business, does about 1.5 to 1.7 a year in top line revenue, and they pay themselves between $500,000 and $600,000 a year in owner salary. Okay? So again, this is one of those things where you just have to, because he didn't want to have a bigger business. He wanted to have the freedom, but have the money box checked, right? He wanted to be able to go hike when he wanted to hike and have that quality of life. You know, Dan, one of our coaches, this isn't his business, his is similar. Dan's a painting contractor. Dan rides his bike in the woods, you know, several days a week during the workday because he's got things on autopilot. And he just knows that, you know, what do they call that? Is it the law of diminishing returns or something like that? Where at some point, growing may or may not make a whole lot of sense for you. And so I think one of the things we do well is we get people really to the heart of that. And let's try to get you the freedom first that you want before having to scale the business. Because a lot, oftentimes what happens when you want to, guys will scale a turd, right? They got this unprofitable business that's full of chaos and all this other stuff, and they're just dumping gas on the thing and they're scaling their problems. So let's address the problems first and then see how you want to approach things.
That's really what we want and what we need. And so I know a big thing that makes your coaching so different is the sales side. So just like, what is the biggest thing you see guys do wrong on the sales side?
They don't train. They don't get sales training, coaching. It's like I was in the Marine Corps, right? It's like a Marine not going to the range and firing a weapon on a regular basis. You're not going to be any good at it. So with that, I would say the other biggest mistakes are we talk too much as salespeople. We run our mouth because we're insecure, because we don't have the training, and we're trying to fill the space with all the reasons why somebody should hire us. And with that goes another big mistake is we think people are going to buy for our reasons, but people always buy for their reasons, not ours. And so until you understand somebody's true motive, you're going to underachieve as a salesperson.
Gotcha. And so, what have you seen in your experience with coaching these guys about intentional profit, and how does that increase revenue? What does that strategy look like?
So we reverse engineer the goal setting with people. We go, what's your overhead in the business? And that includes your salary. So let's just pick a number. Let me get my handy dandy calculator here. All right. So if I say somebody's overhead is 250,000 bucks a year, that's just paying for the marketing, paying for your shop rent, your truck payments. I want to clarify for your listeners, this is everything it takes to keep the lights on, even if you don't have projects to do. Because if I'm not paying my guys in the field, if I'm not buying materials, all that other stuff, I for a week or two or a month, you still have other overhead to pay. That's what we're talking about. And that part of that is your salary. So in our example here, we would go 250,000 bucks is our overhead. Then I'll have a conversation. What do you want in the bank at the end of all that? After everything's paid and you're paid as the owner, what financial pat on the back do you want? You know, that's what net profit is. And say it's another 100 grand, so now we're up to 350,000. Then we look at what their average gross profit has been. And you know, if we go with our Tom's 50% rule, that's funny. And I divide the 350 divided by 0.50, 50%. I got to sell and collect 700 grand and produce it at a 50% to pay for the 250 in overhead and have 100 grand left. So that's your break-even sales goal. All right. So that's how we get that. Now, of course, if you could sell more, sell more. All right. But that's our starting point. And then we reverse engineer, you know, if your average job is $5,000, you got to do 140 jobs. And if your close rate is 40%, you need 350 leads, basically. And so that's how we reverse engineer the goal setting with the profit already worked in, instead of doing what most do and go, let's just throw a sales goal up on the wall, see what happens, and hopefully there's something left over and I can pay myself too.
Yeah, and I think that that's the common way. Just because you're busy doesn't mean you're making money, and I think that's a huge a misconception out there. So if you got all this work, you have to be making money, and if you're not smart about it, you're definitely not making money. That being said, in the home improvement world, how important do you think marketing and having a great website is?
You know my answer.
I know,
but it's so funny.
Not everybody does.
I know, but I'm just laughing. Listen, the minute you go into business for yourself, you give up the right to be a craftsman first. Okay. If I opened a website company tomorrow, if I opened an auto dealer tomorrow, if I opened up anything tomorrow, whatever it is, the minute I print up that business card and I go into business, I'm no longer that thing. I am now a business owner, and business owners market. They build their brand. They're fanatical about it. They're consistent with it. When you build your brand, you obviously have an easier time getting the right customers, but you're also making yourself attractive to other people in the industry that need jobs, that want to work for a great company. So it makes recruiting better. So, and your website's a huge part of that. I think a lot of people, they'll go out and they'll buy the $60,000-$70,000 truck with the big automatic mirrors and stuff like that, but they won't drop $15,000-$20,000 on a website that's going to get them jobs that are $30,000-$100,000 like clockwork over and over when it's built right and you're, you know, creating great content for it and those things. So that's, they're always looking at those third party lead gen sites and stuff, which I want to be clear. Sometimes there's a place for that. There's a time and place, but it shouldn't be the center of your marketing. Your site and you're building your brand should be the center. And then everything else is kind of like little satellites, if you want to call it, feeding all back to you.
So on that same tune, like from your experience and your coaching, should a company offer a lot of services? Like the more that they do is the better? Should they narrow in? What have you found that's been most successful with have you taken companies from doing, yeah, what have you found?
Yeah, I'm a fan of zeroing in on what we do best and who we do it best for and who respect us. And that's why I track our, you know, we always tracked our services, like gross profit per service, gross profit per lead source, all those things. So for instance, you know, I ran a painting company. Interior painting projects were by far our most profitable, okay? Because we didn't have to deal with weather. People loved having us in their home because of the type of people we had. We had amazing crew and they were clean and neat. And so it was just a slam dunk for us to go in and do interiors all day. And all these different factors made them our most profitable. So we spent the bulk of our marketing budget and all that stuff filling that interior calendar, even in the summertime. It's just one of the things that we did best. And, you know, I've worked with people where, you know, so-and-so construction, and we do this, and we do that, and we do this. And I'm like, okay, well, let's sit down and go, where are you making your money? Where are you getting your butt kicked? And the things you're getting your butt kicked on, let's dig into it why a little bit, but most times with those things, we're just going to ditch them. You know, I had one guy where he could not make a profit on a bathroom remodel to save his life, but he'd knock it out of the park with a kitchen all day. So, Sam, what do you think we should do here, right? Well, I think I should probably focus on kitchens. Yeah, so then he changed all of his marketing to kitchens and didn't talk about anything else, and his kitchens grew. So I think that focus helped. People will often ask, well, Tom, if I get that, but like in the meantime, while I'm trying to get more kitchens and a lead comes in for a bathroom or for something else, what do I do with it? Those things are still going to come in. Price them how you can make money and do them on your terms, but I just don't market and try to get them. But if they come our way, we'll do them, you know, was our thought behind it, because I want to focus on what I do best.
Yeah.
That's that, you know, that sweet spot.
Well, and I think you'll have happier customers that are happy with the work that you do, because that's what you're good at. I mean, I think being niche in any business is key. Like I target construction, people in construction, because that's what I'm good at and that's what I know.
Right.
I mean, I could do the other stuff, but I'm not going to be as good or as effective at it. you know. And so, like I said, I think what you're doing out there is awesome. Did I not ask you anything you think somebody needs to know if they're in the home improvement world?
Let me piggyback what you just said a minute ago, because you specialize in construction, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you specialize in something and you're committed to building your brand, creating content, I mean, you've written books, you're always speaking somewhere, you're doing all these things, you get known for the thing. It's so much easier to be known for something with the content that you create. If you were an attorney for everybody, think of the mountain of content that you would never be able to create enough content to dominate in that general niche. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to share that for people. Like, you have to create content, videos, blogs, educate people, all those things that, you know, we do, and we've talked about many times. You just can't go, yeah, I'm just going to do kitchens and never position yourself as that kitchen expert. That's really a key part of this.
No, I think, when we were at the conference, the Yardist, the guy,
Matt,
his Instagram, I mean, that's just, I just love watching that, all of his stuff up there. I mean, I'm a huge fan. He does some great work, and he just does that one thing, and he's really good at it.
Amazing.
And so he can make some great progress. Okay, so what are all the things that you offer? Where can people definitely find you? Tell me the things.
Well, listen, I encourage people to just head to thecontractorfight.com/book, get a free copy, right? Start with that. You can find us on the Contractor Fight podcast, which is hundreds and hundreds of episodes. We got hundreds of videos on Contractor Fight TV on YouTube. We have everything from, you know, entry level, small group type stuff up to, you know, give me your house and your three children's retirements. Coaching packages, right, to help you. You know, I'm kidding, but you know, and everything in between. But I just encourage people to just get involved and start hanging around our community, and, you know, check out our free Facebook group that's got 7,000 something people in it, and you know, that's always a great place to start.
And there's always a great conversation and a very helpful people. I mean, helping each other out, people in the same position. It's not a place where, you know, I'm just going to beat you out because we're competitors. It's really coming from a place where we're all here to help each other grow.
Yep.
And I think you're doing great things out there. I'm glad I can be a part of it as one of your coaches, because I think the legal side is important too, but I think it's just as important as the mindset or the intentional profit. Like, I did my coaching session last week, and it was the wheel of your business. Mm. And there's all these different components, and you have to have an even wheel if you want to go anywhere. And so, I think your coaching does a great job of diving into all of those areas and evening out the wheel so you can move forward.
Well, I was so excited when we found you and were able to bring you on, because, you know, you're in these groups, and every single day, multiple times, people are like, hey, I'm putting together a contract. What should I put? And I'm like, oh my God, stop doing that. Is no better than a homeowner doing their own project. Right?
Yeah,
like, that's what it is. Like,
I'm gonna go dig my own pool in my backyard.
Yeah. You know, it makes absolutely no sense. So having you on the coaching team and the fight's been amazing. I hear great things, and I really appreciate you being there. So
awesome. Yeah. And we'll put all the links in the show notes so people can find you and get the book for free. That's awesome. I highly recommend it. I've read it, and I think it's great for any business.
Thank you.
So thanks again for being here, Tom.
Appreciate you.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Quit Getting Screwed. I hope you found it helpful. If you like what you hear, please like us and follow our podcast. If you want further information, you can find us at subcontractorinstitute.com. We're also on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. And the book is available on Amazon. Tune in 2 weeks from now for a new episode. Thank you.